G'day, I'm Linda Ross and welcome to the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast, where I'm lucky to go right around Australia chatting to gardeners and garden designers and garden lovers about what they love to do, their passion. And of course, gardening gives us all a little antidote from the busy, crazy world out there where we get to put our hands in the soil and take it easy and walk that wonderful pathway to relaxation and a little bit more of a peaceful world.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
Gardening can be a wonderful antidote to a busy, crazy world. My next guest is Dr. Kate Neal. She's from Southern Cross University and is studying therapeutic benefits of gardening in social housing, preschools, all sorts of schools actually, health services and aged care. It's something I'm so passionate about and believe in so much, but I want to know more, so I've got Kate with me. Thank you, Kate, for being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's an honour.
Tell me a little bit more about your PhD. Let's start there because it's such a fascinating field of therapeutic horticulture.
Well, my PhD actually explored what children understood about ethical consumption. And so we often think of children as nagging, irrational consumers. And my PhD really uncovered that they're actually quite rational, thoughtful little beings who worry about many of the same things that us as humans worry about and often don't get an opportunity to practice that through consumption because parents aren't giving them the opportunity.
I'm finding that is spot on. With my little 6 and 10-year-old, they've got this gigantic ethics about the planet and the misuse of plastics, for example, is really a big topic in our household at the moment. They're really passionate about not using single-use plastics.
Absolutely. I mean, in my study, we found that children were aware of the issues around using palm oil, that they were concerned about where their technology was being made, the conditions of the factories, and also the conditions that their animals were being kept in that were used for food. So many of these issues, when I spoke to the parents, they either didn't want their children to discuss or felt that it was too shocking for them to be able to comprehend and think about making a change.
So they're much brighter than we maybe give them credit for.
Well, that, and also I think that adults like to pretend that we're much better at consuming than we really are. We like to think that we're not irrational and we don't make bad decisions and we don't grab Mars bars at the checkout, but we do. So it's really about acknowledging that children, like adults, make decisions through a lot of different thought processes.
That's fascinating. Now, you've got a mother of two girls?
I do, 11 and 4.
Ah, 11 and 4. And is that when you sort of became interested in growing your own food?
It was. I mean, I think you know, there was so much in the media about the importance of growing your own food and having conversations with my girls, well, one girl actually, my eldest at the time, about where the food comes from. I thought the best way to actually demonstrate that is to grow the food with her. So as I kind of potted about and made tons of mistakes, she was sort of beside me and she would start to learn as well. And, you know, the thing is that she would teach me and I would teach her and we would explore it together.
And that time in the garden, did that inspire you to take on that PhD?
It did. I thought, what are the decisions that I'm making and what is my child being exposed to in terms of how I make those decisions? So it really piqued my interest to understand a little bit more about it.
Well, I know that everyone listening, and there's a gigantic swell of going back into the garden or getting our hands back into the soil. And, you know, we kind of know why. We feel good at the end of a busy day in the garden. We feel like we're productive. We've nurtured a little bit of nature, whether it's for, you know, growing flowers or for growing food. It's terribly satisfying, I think, not only for your physical health, but your mental health. But you've just taken that a little bit the next step, really, haven't you? And trying to scientifically prove why that day in the garden is so beneficial for us.
Absolutely. And like you say, we all sort of instinctively know it, especially as gardeners. We know at the end of the day it's really great to just go down and potter in the garden for a while. So that was one of the foundations. I was like, why is this? What is it about? I'm from a social science background, so I was really interested in what does this mean for me? How is what's happening in my natural environment or my social interactions with other people in the garden making me feel better, and my well-being and my sense of belonging and connection to my family, to my yard, to my community. So that was really the driving force behind it. There's great evidence out there around the psychological and the physical benefits of spending time in the garden, but I'm taking a little bit more of a sociological approach to it to understand how is well-being derived from the act of gardening and the reward that we get from seeing our blooms come to life or to be able to pick our first harvest. Things like that that actually never get old for gardeners. We always enjoy.
I think it's that sense of wonder and that childlike sense of wonder. Just even this week for me, seeing some of the little bulbs blossom in that very early sort of moment of spring is just around the corner. And I get this childlike joy about seeing that and watching that in my children as well. And I think that is such a nourishing kind of emotion to be able to, you know, experience that joy like a child, I suppose. I do feel quite childlike most of the time when I'm in the garden, but it is a pleasure, isn't it? It's a real pleasure.
It really is. And I think that it's no different for who you are, which is why a lot of the work that I'm trying to do in the area is working with children. It's working with people with cognitive disability. It's working in the aged care space and in healthcare and rehabilitation. It's that we can all enjoy this. And it's really about developing programs to understand how we can most nurture that or offer the best opportunity for people who otherwise actually don't have those connections to nature. And that's the other thing as a gardener living on a decent sized block, I sometimes take for granted that many people just simply don't have the opportunity to get their hands stuck in the soil.
And I think that's a great privilege, isn't it? And I feel a bit the same. I've got, you know, 50 square metres of a nice, decent veggie garden. We've been growing veggies for, you know, 3 decades. And it's something that's been passed on from my parents to me and now to the next generation. So generation after generation with their hands in the soil. But it's not necessarily the case that you've got that big block anymore, particularly now as we're all in smaller sort of environments. And there's a lot of kids that just don't have any ability to get their hands into the soil. So is that sort of what you're exploring?
Well, in wanting to put the programs together, accessibility is one of the number one issues that we have. So we're really looking for a way to make gardening the most accessible. I met Simon from VeggiePod, which I know a lot of people know, and he had a product that really did perfectly fit much of what we needed there. It's accessible, it's waist height, it's movable, it can be put on flat surfaces or concrete surfaces. And so it was really a great partnership to say, well, I can design a program to get people in the garden, but we actually really need the garden as well. So getting someone like VeggiePod on board was really beneficial because it overcame a lot of those issues of what do we do when we're on the 15th floor or what do we do in an aged care facility where we've got limited outdoor space? What do we do when people rely on even and flat grounds or need waist-height gardening? How do we overcome all of those? And VeggiePod really has been quite the perfect solution for that.
So what's the ethos behind that program?
So what we're doing is developing a program of which can be set into different contexts. And I was pretty uncompromising in my approach. And luckily, VeggiePod were really up for the challenge. We wanted to start with the person. We wanted it to be evidence-based, what we know about therapeutic horticulture. But the program had to start with the person. Do you want to garden? What are the skills that you already have? What experience have you already had about gardening that we can transfer to get this one going? And what's the best way we can help you? For kids, often, you know, we assume that they haven't got any experience for gardening. But every time I've gone out to do the kindergarten program with them, I say, who's planted a plant? And someone throws their hand up and says, I do it at my grandpa's all the time. Who knows how to use mulch? I saw mum do it on the weekend. So we're really finding out what's the existing skill base in the cohort, whether it's kindergarten kids, people in aged care and disability, and then we're building the program from there for them. So we're just providing them with the tools to either access those skills or to actually build upon them.
So where did the kindergarten, that's that program that you've done, when did it come about and how many sort of schools have it?
So we it came about because it was actually the first conversation. My background's in childhood studies, which is why my PhD was around children. And Simon said, you know, we get lots of people who want to put a garden in an early childhood centre, but often they lack the capacity, the resources to keep it going. And I said, well, great, let's do a program that actually puts the kids in charge. They'll tell us what we want, what they want to grow. And the earlier we involve them, the more ownership they'll actually have in the program. And then they'll actually care and feel ownership for the garden. So we're not going to need teachers spending time making it look good. We're waiting for the children to get engaged. We're making the kids do the work. And we know that kids love being actively involved in gardening like that. So kindergarten was a really lovely place for us to start the collaboration and to kind of test the grounds of how it is to work with each other and get the program out there. The program now is in lots of schools. I can't give you an exact number.
That's all right.
It's in lots of daycare centres, and we've got really great feedback from it that the teachers completely underestimated, that the kids were going to love it, that the kids, they thought they would have to wait for this big harvest moment and then make something out of it, but the kids were actually just delighted to kind of munch on the beans or pick the carrots and kind of eat them then and there, which again, as gardeners, we know is actually one of the best perks of gardening. And so the program from there, we started looking at, well, what other contexts could this really work in? Primary schools, we've got our new Sprouters program. That was a great one, and it seemed obvious could build on that understanding that children are dynamic learners. In the aged care, sometimes it's about nurturing those skills and holding on to the ability to garden for as long as possible. And we know that people get really concerned of all the freedoms and the sense of identity that they are going to give up when they go into an aged care facility. So our Senior Grow program is really about allowing them to hold on to that and therefore hold on to their own personal sense of identity whilst building the idea of community in aged care residencies.
I think it's absolutely integral for aged care facilities to have high quality gardens. And I sometimes think that the quality is lacking a little bit, and the kind of plant material that I think needs to reflect on the eras perhaps in which those people have lived through can create those slightly historical context gardens that give a nod back to the 50s and the 60s perhaps. I don't know, does that happen?
Absolutely. I mean, again, taking this person-centred approach, we're asking the residents, what do you want to grow? For some people, it's being able to maintain their orchid collection that they've nurtured and loved for many years in their own houses. And this is an opportunity to bring that with them as they transition into this new lifestyle. For others, it's certainly a sensory thing. It's about the smell of roses and the evoking of memories and emotions that lavender brings. And for others, it's just wanting to grow tomatoes because they've always done it and it just reminds them of so many things. So really, that's the approach we have. Again, not to harp on the product features, but because the veggie pods are portable, we literally have the ability to wheel them into people's rooms. And so that's something that a lot of people actually miss out as they become less and less mobile in their old age. This enables the garden to come to them in essence.
Well, there are so many aspects to the therapeutic horticulture sort of topic, and it's really wonderful that it can span so many different groups of people, vulnerable people and all ages. Why? Just tell me more about how we can scientifically prove therapeutic horticulture, because I'm feeling like it's in that science that we can then convince the decision makers to find more appropriate and better quality gardens in hospitals and aged care facilities.
I think rigorous research is the key. Not because it's necessarily going to uncover anything new, because we know as practitioners, as gardeners, as horticulturists, as landscape designers, we know what the benefits are for people. It's about actually researching it rigorously, using methodologies that actually uncover what those benefits are and link it back to a theory. And I think that the area of therapeutic horticulture is just ripe and it's growing and people are really enthusiastic about it. So I think if we can get some strong theoretical frameworks, underpinning it from both the hard sciences but also in the social sciences to understand how is this actually helping someone's well-being, how do they get a sense of belonging for their local community, for them, where their residents, for the world in a broader sense, then we'll be able to create a dialogue that is consistent. And so when we're going to policymakers, we're sending a consistent story and evidence base to them, which makes it much more difficult to argue against the benefits and hopefully increase the chances of being funded.
You say that when you speak to aged care providers about sort of that resident transition, what are they asking for?
So residents transitions into aged care is a really difficult time for a lot of people because they know they're losing a lot of their autonomy and the sense of their identity. They're also losing their local community depending on where they live. And so the idea is that therapeutic horticulture, gardening, a program like Senior Grow, would enable people to take a part of their identity that they really hold dear and, you know, in some cases have 60, 70 years life experience doing, and they can bring a piece of that into this new transitional life that they're in. The opportunity that they can then tend to it, share stories with other residents, compare techniques, you know, share knowledge, helps them to actually feel respected and valued. And that's really important in a person's sense of well-being. As they get to know the residents, they actually start to get a sense of belonging, that somebody cares about me, that this place that we meet actually starts to have meaning and significance in my life. So those are very, very important things that when we talk to aged care providers time and time again, they say, if we can allow a person to feel more comfortable when they move into this part of their life, then that helps them immeasurably in their physical health, in their mental health, and in their sense of connection to where they're now living.
I think it's such a dynamic approach, this one in particular, having experienced this with my grandmother. It was a very stressful time in her life and she really put up a big struggle. But to have a more of a positive approach, I think, is so good, because I think honestly in aged care facilities, they're not really encouraged to participate in the garden around, and the gardens seem to be fairly sort of pedestrian, and there doesn't seem to be really areas for intensive horticulture, like growing, you know, vegetables. But you're saying with this Seniors Grow program that what you're able to help or encourage the aged care providers themselves to provide it?
Absolutely, yeah. So, and we're dealing with a few aged care providers at the moment who are really receptive to this idea. I mean, gardens take maintenance, and we know that, you know, in a business type setting, that also takes resources. So a lot of the time, I think the gardens that we do see typically in those sort of areas are only looked after as well as they've got the resources or the staff are interested in doing. This really shifts that focus and says, let's give the gardening, in essence, to the residents, because we know that they're the ones that can benefit from it. A lot of the time, you know, boredom, social isolation, not having a reason to come out of your room are really sad realities a lot of the time, whereas gardening gives that opportunity. And because we've got it in the accessible height, raised way where the garden can actually come to them, it just helps with a lot of those accessibility issues that otherwise can be a concern in, as you described, the kind of pedestrian gardens and the landscaping in the areas.
Well, it's so fascinating. And I know that there are science is happening and, you know, universities are really getting behind this all across the world. I read reports every week of new and interesting research in this field of therapeutic horticulture. I think it's such a really, it's so encouraging to get all of that. And I do feel like there's this groundswell of horticulturists that are really trying to communicate this. And there's a conference coming up. And is that being held at your university?
It is. I was very happy to be able to convince the Australian Therapeutic Horticulture Association to host their 2018 conference in our Gold Coast campus at Southern Cross University. So it's on the 26th of October. I've seen the program. It hasn't been released yet, but we've got amazing speakers in the area of aged care, dementia, children, people with cognitive and physical disabilities. I'll be there talking about the importance of the research arm of it all. They had the conference last year in Adelaide, and we saw academics, landscape architects, occupational therapists, local government, the practitioners on the ground there. They were a great bunch, lots of ideas, lots of sharing of ideas, and I think it's only can be a good thing for the burgeoning field.
So Cultivate New South Wales heavily involved and the new national body.
They are, yeah, and our South Australian body as well. Yes, they all come together under the umbrella of the new national body to put on this conference, and they all work tirelessly to kind of bring it to life. It should be a great event.
And is that open to everybody in that field?
It is. It's open to the public. The easiest way is probably to Google ATLC 2018.
What's that? ATLC 2018. Okay, yep. Got it.
And then you're in Google, you'll see that Cultivate, it will take you to the Cultivate page, and then that will take you to the booking system. Veggie Pod have come on as a sponsor, one of the major sponsors. They're really behind this area, and I think it's so important that we have industry behind what we're doing. It's hard in the early stages of any discipline to actually get funding for the research and for the programs. So to have someone like Veggie Pod to actually put up the money to help get these programs running and to help get this conference out there and make all of the knowledge accessible to everyone is a huge commitment from them, but it really shows the benefit that we can have if we all get together in the industry and all the different areas of that.
I'm so excited about it because I think that the network that can, if we all get together for the conference and then what we can achieve working all together in all of these different areas is just so exciting. Dr. Kate Neal, you've come across as just so serious and so fantastic, and your research is so important, but there's a wonderful, happy and dynamic side of you that I'm sure many followers of your Instagram handle, which is My Little Sheesh Shed, knows. You're just such a riot in the garden, and it's so wonderful to get your Instagram posts. Does that give you sort of opportunity to just be yourself on Instagram?
It's so ridiculous that for some reason I just forget that people actually do see those posts because in fact, because
they're quirky and they're fun and they're funny and they're silly, and I think that's just so fun, like wonderful.
I think it goes back to what you're saying about feeling childlike in the garden, and that's honestly how I also feel when I'm in the garden. I started that account because none of my friends cared about my failing tomatoes or my great strawberry or my funny shaped sweet potato, and it's just been such a great experience to meet gardeners from all over the world, and just to share that kind of really simple passion we have for getting out in the garden.
It's absolutely lovely. I love getting your posts, and it's been a real pleasure to get to know you a little bit more today. I'm really looking forward to the conference come October. So if you're interested in, you know, providing wonderful gardens for so many people in Australia, from the 3 to 5 age groups at your local kindy to perhaps your local school to your aged care facility, maybe your parents are going into an aged care facility and you want to make sure they've got the most wonderful options to keep gardening, then let's go to the Therapeutic Horticultural Conference, which is on October the 26th. More information, just Google ATLC 2018, and maybe we can make a little bit of difference all together working as a team. Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Kate Neal.
Thank you so much.
You are a hoot. And for those who want to catch up with Kate and what she's doing in her garden, just head to Instagram and check out her handle, My Little Sheesh Shed. That's a tongue twister, Kate.
Oh, no, I should change it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It was just wonderful to talk to Dr. Kate Neal about that really important aspect of horticulture, getting out there and doing something great in the community. I hope that it was interesting for you. For more information, you can just head to the website. Go on to Facebook, to the Garden Clinic, if you've got any questions for me at all. Lovely to keep in touch. And on Instagram too. The Garden Clinic aims to give you lots of practical information to keep your gardening and to create that garden of your dreams. I'm Lynn Ross. I'm a landscape architect who gardens in a little place on the Central Coast called Frog Hollow. If you like what you hear, please give me a 5-star rating on iTunes. It really helps me get new gardeners to find me here on the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. And again, if you've got a question, head over to our Facebook page, The Garden Clinic, and we'll answer it for you. Thanks for joining me today. Have a happy day in the garden and go safely.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.